The following program is suitable for all ages.
The phone. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor and the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffone, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffone 55, the John Buffone Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffone 55, a fast-paced approach at Chicago Bears football analysis. I am your host, John Buffone. It is the end of the season show. We're going to put a bow on this dreadful 2017 season for the Chicago Bears, but there is hope. There will be a new coach on the sidelines for the Bears come 2018. We're going to talk a little bit about that later, but before we dig into the show, I'm going to throw it over to my producer, Aldo Gandia, to tell you how the show works. And if this is your first time listening, where the hell you been the entire season? Aldo, tell them how the show works.
Well, it works this way. There's two halves to the show. The first half, I typically ask you five questions about the Bears, and then I typically ask you five questions about their upcoming opponent. But since this is the year-end show, the first half is going to be five questions devoted to the present situation of the Chicago Bears, and then the second half of the show will be five questions dedicated to the future. So that's how we're changing things up for this season-ending episode. And before we begin, John, I just was wondering if you have any New Year's resolutions like you'd like to share with the Barflies.
Sure. It's not so much of a specific thing, but I think in 2018 and moving forward, I'm gonna start taking a little more risks, and I'm not really even sure what that means. But I know I lived a pretty fruitful life so far, but I want to step out of my comfort zone with a few things. Maybe do a little more traveling, go see some things I've always wanted to see, but I've always kind of put on the back burner. I have some extended vacation days coming my way in 2018, so I look forward to using them a little bit. I see in the chat room someone says work out more. I hope that's not directed at me, or I might fall over and die. but yeah, basically I want to see some things that I've always said I wanted to see, but have always kind of put on the back burner.
Is Brazil in your future?
I don't know. It's pretty hot down there. I don't like hot climates.
Okay. All right, let's get the show on the road. Question number one. Again, this is five questions about the future, present state of the Chicago Bears. Now, question one. At Ryan Pace's New Year's Day press conference, it was announced that John Fox, with his 14-34 record, was fired by Ryan Pace, and Pace himself, with his 14-34 record, has had his contract extended through the 2021 season by team president Ted Phillips. Do you think there's a problem with this, John? And you are now on the clock for 55 seconds.
I don't think there's a problem with it. I think it was actually the right move to give whatever head coach you bring in, you need to let him know that he's not going to be a lame duck coach in a year. If you're a coaching candidate and your GM is canned, the new GM is most likely going to want to bring in his own guy. And all of a sudden, you're a lame duck coach before you even really get to put things into place, before you even get to see your plan start to formulate. So by extending Pace, I mean, there's no guarantee that he's going to survive the length of that contract anyway, but by extending him, you are making the job more attractive to the more qualified candidates, and they don't need to worry if they'll only have one season to kind of turn things around. I mean, the record obviously is not good, and the jury is out on a few of these draft picks, but I think it was a more business-savvy mood because they want to make sure if they find the guy they want and they find the guy that they think is going to put it all together – for the Bears. They want to make sure that he is not hesitant to take the job because potentially the GM won't be there in a year. So I think this was more along the lines of it was headed towards just showing the head coach that there's going to be stability.
I totally agree with that, but you don't have any problem at all with the fact that he had the same record that John Fox did, and he gets rewarded with a contract extension and Fox gets fired. No problem at all with it.
It scares the hell out of me, to be honest with you. But I mean, what other choice do the Bears really have at this point? I mean, I'm going to have my reservations on it, and I don't know if this grand plan that Ryan Pace is putting together is actually going to work. But if it means, you know, giving him an extra year on the contract, and like I said, they could can him beforehand anyway. If that means, you know, giving him a symbol of stability, if that brings in the right guy, I think that's a chance worth taking.
I think that's sensible thinking there. All right, question number two. John, please evaluate, because this guy has been in the headlines. Everybody's kind of wondering about this gentleman. Please evaluate Ted Phillips, the president and CEO of the Chicago Bears. You are on the clock.
Well, he's been with the organization in some capacity for over three decades, about 35 years. But what can I say that's ultra positive? I don't know. He's entering his 19th season as the president. The Bears are 18 games under 500 during that time. So that's underwhelming. But, you know, fans constantly complain about the front office, even if, you know, even if they things are okay. I mean, there's always a constant kind of you know, shots being taken at the front office. They don't like they don't like some of the players, and then they don't like the coach, and then they that means they don't like the GM. I'm talking about from the fans' point of view. So this, I'm saying it starts all the way at the top. If you don't like a player, then you don't like the coach, and you don't like the GM. Indirectly, that means you don't like the president. And if your hatred runs that deep, you start directing rage towards the owner as well. So they didn't fire Ryan Pace, which I thought was the right move to do. The Bears would be hiring the third general manager in the last 7 years if they would have canned Pace. So I kind of understand that move from that point of view too, and I like that he's going to be a little more hands off in this situation and kind of let the football guys make the decision. So the results speak for themselves. Should I love Ted Phillips? No, and I don't really know a reason why I should.
Yeah, I think that if you loved Ted Phillips, you would probably be the only Chicago Bears fan.
Well, you live in Green Bay. I mean, that's pretty easy.
That's right. All right, that leads to question number three. Are you comfortable with the McCaskey family's ownership of this franchise? John, you're on the clock. 55 seconds. Go.
We hear about the history of the family, and it's deeply rooted in the NFL. And do I believe that the McCaskeys truly want to see the Bears win? Yes, I do. I believe that they would like to see the Bears be a winner. I mean, we see with this in ownership a lot. Dan Snyder wants to win. He spent money like crazy when he took over the Washington Redskins. And what did I get that franchise? A whole lot of nothing. So you can say the same with other franchises. I'm sure Jimmy Haslam and the Browns don't want to be the laughing stock of the league, but they are. I don't always buy into the notion that because you're a million or even a billionaire that you're automatically really good at running a football franchise. That's like saying, I'm really good at Monopoly, so I'm going to be really qualified to be your investment banker. Sometimes the two things don't necessarily translate back and forth of being a very successful in one business and thinking that's just going to go over to football. So I think the difference with the McCaskeys is they've been around football most of their lives. I mean, they're stemming from, you know, George Halas, who would probably be foaming at the mouth if he saw how this team was being run right now. And it all starts at the top. Some teams can't get out of their own way, and you don't want to be so cynical to think that they're only looking at this as far as a piggy bank. They're not trying to just make money on this because the fans will show up regardless. I hate taking that approach because I think that turns you into a poorly thinking person. Even if it's true, I don't want to think that.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a lot of interesting points in those 55 seconds. And let me ask you this. Do you think that it's okay for a owner to lose money for the organization and in some cases shareholders? That's not the case with the Bears because it's family owned. But do you think it's okay for an owner to purposely lose money in order to win?
Well, I think that, I mean, you can take that by a case-by-case basis. If this is a guy whose sole way of making money is the football franchise, which is rare, then no, I think you want to be able to stay afloat, and you got to kind of look at that bottom line a little bit. But also, you got to take into account that they're making tons of money out of the NFL right now. They're making tons of money from each of these teams. I think it would be hard to say that you're going to be, you know, going bankrupt if you spend a little extra money trying to win. So I think that a lot of these guys have their hands in a lot of different industries, and they have a lot of profit streaming coming in from different areas, and you don't want to get labeled as that guy who's only looking at the bottom line from your football team, because that is the worst thing you could say to fans, or at least kind of insinuate to fans. So if it takes spending more money to win, I get it, but you got to make sure that money is spent smart, because if it's not, then you're just kind of throwing money up in the air and hopefully it's landing somewhere nice.
Yeah, John, you're absolutely right. It would take a complete moron to lose money as being an owner of an NFL football team. That's like printing money. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. All right, question number four. It's no secret that a great load of the future success or failure of the Bears lies on two Ryan Pace decisions, his next head coaching hire and the selection of Mitch Trubisky last season as the team's quarterback. Now, after one season of watching Mitch play, how confident are you today that Trubisky is going to be a true franchise quarterback? John, you're on the clock.
I'm semi-confident. I mean, we saw flashes of a guy who can play in this league, and quite frankly, he wasn't supposed to play much this year anyway, but the Mike Glennon experiment kind of exploded, and maybe Mitch got in there a little sooner than we thought he was going to be in there, not to mention he showed flashes in the preseason, which made us want to see him even sooner. 13 starts in college doesn't necessarily prepare you for the NFL, but he got a crash course this year on a team with a coach that isn't exactly quarterback-friendly and a wide-receiving core that challenges for the worst in the league. I mean, he made it through a rookie season where everything was stacked against him, and he didn't even look like he quit on the team. He looked like he wanted that leadership role. It appears that he's putting in the work as well. So the next head coach is everything here. You got to find a guy that can bring out all of Trubisky's talent, and then it's Ryan Pace's job to surround that talent with talent at the receiving position. So I think this year was okay for him. I mean, this is going to be a big learning season for him. So much depends on year two, however. This should be an exciting yet terrifying time at the same time for Bears fans, because this is where we should see a little bit of a leap.
Yeah, I was listening to one of the Chicago radio shows, and I think it was the Spiegel Parkins show on WSCR. One of the guys said that Trubisky has to be not detoxified from the stuff that he's learned, but defoxified. And
yes.
And the reasoning behind that he gave was that Trubisky got worse, in this person's opinion. I'm not sure everyone would agree with this, but that Trubisky got worse from that first opening game against the Minnesota Vikings, where he played fairly well. He unfortunately threw that late game interception that on a drive that could have resulted in the Bears winning that game. But from that moment to his last game, Trubisky did not improve as a quarterback, and so that now whoever comes in has got to defoxify Mitch Trubisky. You kind of agree with that? Yeah, you do?
I agree with that, because I think that they put the reins on him so much and kind of constricted the game plan to a fact that you don't want him to think that's the norm. You don't want to think that's what playing quarterback in the NFL is like, where some games you're only going to throw the ball 12 times. I mean, this needs to be expanded, and it needs to be brought to the light sooner rather than later, that, hey, this is how you play quarterback, not this, not hand the ball off 30 times, not run pass. There's actually some intricacies that you need to learn. So yeah, I agree. Defoxify would be kind of a good term for that.
Yeah, and I just grew very concerned with Trubisky's accuracy, passing accuracy, as the season went on, got worse. And I think that had to do with him being ingrained about protecting the ball, don't turn it over, that he started to kind of concentrate maybe too much on that and not on some of the mechanics necessary to throw that accurate pass that we saw in preseason.
Absolutely.
All right, question number five. I'm going to put you to the test here. You talked about talent in your last response, and so I'm going to put you under the test with our 55-second format. Before we get into these future questions, grade each of these three NFL drafts that Ryan Pace oversaw: the 2015 draft, the 2016 draft, and 2017 draft. And I think that's a good segue to talking about the future, the near future, about the Chicago Bears. John, you're on the clock.
Here we go. Okay, 2015 was kind of a mess other than grabbing Adrian Amos in the fifth round and Eddie Golden in the second. That was all right. Other than that, you had Kevin White in the first round, Hieronis Grasso in the third, and Jeremy Langford in the fourth. I give that a C-minus performance there in the 2015 draft. 2016, much better. Leonard Floyd in the first. That seems to be working out pretty well. Same with Cody Whitehair in the second. Kind of a Swiss Army knife on the line. Then you grab Jonathan Bullard and Nick Kwiatkowski in the third and fourth. And oh, yeah, by the way, you grab Jordan Howard in the fifth round. So I really like that draft a lot. That one gets an A minus for me. Now, 2017, that's a lot harder to grade because you only have 1 year to kind of go off of it. But they go out and they get their guy at quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky. They have a guy with a ton of talent at tight end in Adam Shaheen. And they may have gotten a steal in Eddie Jackson in the fourth round. And, you know, you get your gadget guy in Tariq Cohen also in the fourth round. So those all sound pretty good right now. I mean, like I said, you only have about 1 year to go off of it. So I'm going to grade that one out as a B with the potential to rise to an A plus if Trubisky becomes the franchise quarterback.
I like those grades. I do. I may be a little too kind with that first year, given that it looks like
C minus simply because of Adrian Amos. That's about it.
Well, and Eddie Goldman was in that first year.
And Eddie Goldman, yeah,
right.
Of course.
So maybe C minus is a decent grade. Okay, good stuff. Now let's tackle these five questions of the future. Number one. Now that the Bears hold the eighth pick of the first round, are you a best player available or draft from a position of need kind of guy? And depending on which one you are, which guys or which positions do you feel the Bears should target? John, you got 55 seconds.
Well, I've been looking over a lot of mock drafts, and the majority of them have the Bears taking a wide receiver, whether it be Calvin Ridley out of Alabama or Christian Kirk out of Texas A&M. I usually tend to say draft a position you need if you are drafting high. If I'm the Bears and I'm drafting in the top 10 and all of a sudden Saquon Barkley is available, I'm not taking him. You have Jordan Howard, and your team is in no position to make luxury picks. So if you're in the back of the first round and you already have a solid team, yeah, go for it. Take that luxury pick, and it's going to be a nice shiny toy for you. But if you're in the top 10, you have holes to fill, and you better fill at least one of them. So that being said, if you are drafting for need and you don't see anyone that you are completely sold on, and I'm talking, and the Bears at number 8 may not be sold on either one of these receivers, if some of those names are still out there, maybe there's a quarterback still there, maybe there's Saquon Barkley is still there, you go ahead and trade down, because maybe you go ahead and you get another second round pick, or you get, sometimes you get a future first round pick out of that. So maybe you flip that and you still get a guy that you are pretty high on, but you can move back in the back of the round. I think that the Bears should draft for need, but they also look at the values, look at the slot on value as well.
My whistle got stuck here.
I got cut off big time.
All right, that's interesting. Isaiah Robles in the chat room volunteers Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, as a first-round pick. And we don't typically see guards going that high in a top 10 pick. But I saw this guy play a lot at Notre Dame. Saw him play live once. And saw most of the games on television. This guy is a stud. He really is.
The line could use anything at this right now. If they could get an anchor on the line right now, that would be fine. That's worth its weight in gold for a first round pick.
Yeah, and Draft Dr. Phil and I have had this debate. I'm of the opinion that guards now are as valuable to a team as outside tackles, because quarterbacks are being asked to get rid of the ball so quickly that we no longer have to worry about those outside rushes. It's more about the interior of the line and allowing the quarterback to step up in pressure. Teams still put their best pass rushers on the outside, but if you're getting rid of the ball under 3 seconds, then you can nullify not having great offensive tackles. And a lot of teams are offensive tackle deficient. It's become a concern throughout the NFL. All right, question number two is a bit complicated here, so let's see if I can get it out right, and then you can hit it out of the park. The Bears have several players with possible contract buyouts that would save the team millions if they went out and bought out the contract. Let's zero in on some of these guys, and then you tell me whether the Bears should keep, release, or try to renegotiate with them. I will focus on the offensive players for this question number two, and then on question number three, we'll focus on the defensive players because there's a lot of contracts that the Bears can potentially buy out this season. So the players are Mike Lennon, Josh Sitton, Deion Sims, Bobby Massey, and Marcus Wheaton. Those are five players on the offense that could potentially be bought out and saving Ryan Pace a lot of cap money space. So you have 55 seconds to give me your opinion on what Ryan Pace should do with these guys, and it starts right now.
That gives me 10 seconds for each guy, so I'll try to make this quick. So, Mike Glennon, see ya. Thanks for stopping by. Hope you enjoy your $18 million for playing all of a month or so in Chicago. Looks like Mark Sanchez is more involved with Trubisky's progression than Glennon is. Get those bad vibes out of there. He's a remnant. He's a remnant of the Fox era. Get him out of there. Buy him out, whatever it takes. Just Sitton. I would try to renegotiate. He's 31 years old, often injured. Maybe he's a good locker room guy. Do I think he would renegotiate to stay in Chicago? Probably not. He's not going to get $8 million elsewhere. So I would try to renegotiate, but I can see him potentially being a casualty in that. Deion Sims, average tight end that epitomized the Bears offense this year. Very hem-haw, and average was acceptable, and let's try to target a guy who's not overly talented. Shaheen is the future, and there are plenty of other capable backup tight ends. Go ahead and release Deion Sims. Bobby Massey, this kind of depends on if they address the offensive line the way they should. If they're going to retool, you can probably cut ties. However, you can't send Mitch out there with a makeshift line with questionable NFL talent, and this line does get banged up a lot, and Massey could provide some depth if he's supplanted. I'm going to go over overtime here. Marcus Wheaton, not even a debate. Cut him. He couldn't stay healthy. This little experiment of high upside, mid-talent level wide receivers is over. There needs to be a complete overhaul of the position, and once they either draft or bring in a couple wide receivers, there's not going to be any room for Marcus Wheaton. He's gone.
Now, I should tell our listeners that we also did this exercise on Bears 100 Proof with Shane, the smartest man in the barroom, Marsaw, and Draft Dr. Philotoshin. So it's going to be interesting for us barflies to compare notes with John Buffon. All right, now, question number three, let's tackle the defense. And this time there's even one more guy, so you're going to have to really work fast here in 55 seconds. We've got Pernell McPhee, Danny Trevathan, Marcus Cooper, Willie Young, Gerald Freeman, and Quinton Demps, and the clock starts now.
All right, I like Pernell McPhee, but he can't stay on the field. When he is, he looks like a shell of himself. He's a monster player, but this happens. We see the game catch up to you, and we see good players fade away. Say goodbye to Pernell McPhee. Danny Trevathan, we saw how things looked without him on there. I keep him. He was the quarterback of the defense. He was the glue to the linebacking core, and he hits like a freight train. I really like Trevathan. He needs to be out there. The Bears should retain him. Marcus Cooper, they can do better. This depends on if they re-sign Fuller and Mukamara. They can probably get a young guy in there for cheaper and maybe develop him into something. Not to mention, Bryce Callahan is okay for what they use him for. I would say goodbye to Marcus Cooper. Willie Young. I love Willie Young. I think he started to flourish in the 3-4 scheme. He got hurt, but I think he's going to be a well-received pass rusher option next year, even if it's just on third down. I like what I saw out of Willie Young, who apparently wanted out of Chicago a few years ago after they switched to the 3-4, but I think he's getting comfortable in that position. Freeman, he's going to be 32. It's not a terrible price tag at $3.5 million, but I can see them wanting to move on. The 10-game suspension is not helping either. Maybe they try to bolster that position in the draft. I can see him being gone. Quinton Demps, often injured. I don't know how many times I have to say this about a Bears player, but it looks like the safety position could be just fine without him. Thanks for stopping by, Quinton Demps. We'll see you later.
Great job. Great job. And I think most of the people in the chat room who are with us live here agree with your picks. Now, let's move to question number four. This time, you give me a list of the coaching candidates who you find most intriguing for this Bears head coaching job. You got 55 seconds, and it starts right now.
Well, John DeFilippo comes to mind. Apparently, he's a guru with X's and O's, and he was crucial to Carson Wentz's progression in Philadelphia this year. He hasn't done much play calling, so that's a little bit of a concern. That being the case, I think it would be an awesome feat to somehow steal both DeFilippo and Frank Wright from Philadelphia, kind of bring them over as a combo package and kind of have them do to Trubisky what they did to Carson Wentz. Matt Nagy is another option for the offensive coordinator for Kansas City. He's been under Andy Reid. I actually interviewed Nagy this summer at an event in Pennsylvania, and he had all the sounding intelligence of an NFL coach. He's a former quarterback who relied heavily on his intelligence to keep him relevant, and he's been learning the play calling under Andy Reid for a while. Whether you think that's good or bad is he neither here nor there, but he has been seasoned for this kind of thing. Also, Pat Shurmur and Josh McDaniels have been floated out there. Both of them have head coaching experience, although not great experiences, with Shurmur in Cleveland and McDaniels in New England, but still, they've been there before. They know what it's like to be a head coach. There's also been some other names thrown out there as well, as far as Wilkes, the defensive coordinator for Carolina. I just don't see them going the defensive route for this.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Josh McDaniels, who had, 2 years over at Denver and a losing record. And he has that interesting history of when he joined the Broncos, Jay Cutler was the quarterback, and they did not get along because McDaniels made it known that he was looking for, to make a trade for Matt Castle, is it? Yeah, Matt Castle. And so things started off terribly for McDaniels. But it should be noted that Brian Belichick, Bill Belichick, excuse me, started off poorly with Cleveland.
And, absolutely.
And so, you know, maybe the second time around is the way. And then also McDaniel's brother works in the Chicago Bears organization as some type of quality control person. So I wonder if that gives him an inside track into the interview process. I've heard from both sides of the story that, yes, that might help him, but no, it might not. So I don't know. This is a fascinating time for Bears fans, and I hope that the Chicago media does a good job of getting to the bottom of what's going on and trying to get as much details as possible, because this is really good soap opera stuff.
Should be fun.
All righty. Question number five, our final question. John, as part of our warm-up show, I asked you about your personal New Year's resolution. Now, what New Year's resolutions do you wish the Chicago Bears would commit to? You got 55 seconds, and then after that, we're going to do a little prediction. So answer this one first. Ready, set, go.
I think the resolution should be make Chicago Bears football relevant. I said this before, but it sucks not caring in November. In September, in October, I am so tuned into this team. And then when they start falling apart, I start checking my fantasy team more often. And by December, I want the season to be over. That's a disheartening feeling. It's disheartening that a game in Chicago with snow falling literally means nothing anymore. And there are empty seats all around. So make a resolution to win back the fans. Bears fans want a winner so badly. They want their fandom to mean something. They want to go to a game or watch a game and feel like there's actually something on the line. That's why loving sports is the best thing in the world. As a Bears fan, when's the last time you truly got juiced up for a game because you felt something significant was on the line? Maybe December 30th of 2013 with the NFC North title on the line and Aaron Rodgers throws a 48-yard bomb over Chris Conte to Randall Cobb and the Bears missed the playoffs. Maybe that's the last time you really felt something like that. So I want you to make a resolution to make me believe again, Bears. Make me believe in you. Please. That's all I want, is to be able to watch a game in the second half of the season and it actually means something.
Preach it, brother. Preach it. I love it. All right, prediction time. We don't have a game next week. We won't have a game for a long time, but we do want to get your prediction on when you think this team, this Chicago Bears team, will become a playoff team. So the clock is off. Take as much time as you like.
Well, this might sound crazy, and it might sound a little bit like a homer, but I think it could be as early as next year. A lot would have to fall into place, don't get me wrong, but I think it's possible. The head coach needs to get in sync with Trubisky. They have to get a receiving core of maybe Allen Robinson or Jarvis Landry to go along with perhaps a newly drafted Calvin Ridley to go with Cam Meredith and Dontrell Inman. The young defense will be a year wiser and hopefully more healthy. And this division isn't a juggernaut anymore, or just not in general, it's not. Do we expect the Vikings to continue with this lightning in the bottle with Case Keenum, or is the clock going to strike midnight on them eventually? The Packers are not a great team without Aaron Rodgers. We saw that, and I don't want to be the first one to bring it up, but let's not forget that at some point next year and next season, Aaron Rodgers will be 35. I don't necessarily expect him to fall off, but at some point that athleticism will slow down. And then the Lions, well, yeah, they're who we say we are. So they're who we think they are. So I think there's a chance. I'm saying there's a chance. So there is a lot of ifs, but I think it's plausible to say the Bears could be in playoff contention next year. And I think in 2019, we just might see something even better. So I think that we are on the upswing. I think it's finally time to stop thinking, okay, in 2 years this, in 2 years that, 3 years this. We can actually start being happy about a season starting. We don't have to start looking 4 years in the future. We don't have to start thinking, well, in 5 years when we do this. In 2018, I'm not saying it's going to be the Super Bowl season. I'm saying it's going to be the step, potentially, that we see the Bears start being relevant again. And that's all we can possibly ask for right now. But before we go, I just want to say, go to bearsbarroom.com for all of the latest on the Bears coaching search. And if you're in the mood for some adult humor, barroom style, you can, and some football analysis, Bears 100 Proof is available on your podcast stream at the website. As for our off-season schedule, we are planning a monthly show. We'll be back after a new coach is hired, before and after the free agent frenzy, and before and after the draft. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at JDBuffone and follow the Bears Barroom at Bears Barroom with updates on exact dates, and you will find news on our Facebook page as well at Bears Barroom. Thank you so much for listening this season. I can't explain how much fun I've had interacting with all of you, but we are not gone. The fun is just about to start, Bears fans. We'll see you next time.